welcome. I'm Alec Hogg. Well, by now you've likely scanned the headlines on biznews.com or caught the interviews on the channel, but the real story often lies in the margins, the context that doesn't make the press release and the whispers that we pick up after the record button stops. Whether it's the shifting sands of geopolitics or the political currents that are shaping our economy, that's what we do here. We strip away the polish to tell you the backstory and why it actually matters. This is the Editor's Desk. Exclusive analysis for our BizNews Premium members. It's Tuesday, the 24th of February, 2026. Let's take a look behind the curtain. Well, the curtain I'm taking a look at right now is the state financial situation, the expenditure and income to South Africa's organization called the government. We usually call it the government. It's actually the public sector. It's the state. It's everything that sucks off the rest of the economy, with a theory that the private sector generates the income, or we know that, and that the state then takes part of that income or some of that income via taxes and provides a productive service for it, gives us back more than we would be able to buy individually. That's the theory. The practice, of course, in a country like South Africa is a long, long way from that idealistic theory. We have a state sector that is excessive. We have one of the biggest cabinets in the world. So it's almost like if you manage to get power in South Africa, you are legally allowed to pull in the funds from those who are working in the private sector, those who are at risk, those who don't have a job for life, those who will be needing to do something to produce extra income for themselves after they've paid their taxes. And it's got quite ridiculous, actually. For something like 4 to 5 months of the year now, South Africans work just for the state. And that money all goes into the central pool, and that money in the central pool then gets distributed, or cynically many of us believe gets stolen. Anyway, the job of the Treasury, and thank heavens we have a highly professional and a really good treasury in South Africa. And generally speaking, look, we had some dummies, empty suits and really crazy people as finance ministers. But generally speaking, we've had good finance ministers in South Africa. It's almost like there's been an understanding amongst the most powerful politicians that you've got to have the financial director who, with his finger on the pulse. And in turn, the finance ministers have made sure that we've got good people in the Treasury. So all round, we've been pretty well served. Certainly in an African context, we're way ahead of other countries on the continent, or we have been historically and probably at the moment as well. So that's the good news. The bad news is that we still have a system where democracy becomes a race to the finish, and the finish is 50%. And if you get over 50%, you make all the rules. And that's a very bad system. And that's not the way democracy was ever supposed to be. Well, we're moving away from that in South Africa, but we still have this dominance of the body politic by one political party, which has got an idealistic approach that puts its views and its beliefs ahead of what should be happening in the country generally. And what should be happening in the country generally, if you are leading the country, is you should be growing the prosperity of all your people. And if you have a look at the scoreboard, that is, the South African politicians, or those who run the place, have been playing in World Cup cricket and getting Royal Ducks every time they went out to bat. Because for something like 15 years now, GDP per capita, the amount of money that each of us have as a slice of the national pot has been falling. Now, that's not a good thing. That's a very bad thing, because eventually people get so poor, or so many people get so poor, that they say no more of this, and then you get the revolutions and the chaos that has happened in so many places around the world. We've just most recently seen it in Madagascar, before that Bangladesh, before that Syria, and so on. There are many examples of that. Arab Spring was all due to the leaders of the country ignoring, being deranged in not realizing or not wanting to realize what's going on. Now, it doesn't just happen in poor countries, can happen in rich countries as well. But I'm off to the budget tomorrow. I'll be spending most of the day from 6 a.m. till 2 p.m. poring over the national accounts. It's a great opportunity to get a good sense of what's going on. In between all of this, we do have the finance minister accompanied by the DG of finance, the Reserve Bank governor, the head of SARS, and usually his deputies as well, the deputy finance ministers, giving us a one-hour press conference answering questions. And that is while we're in lockup, while the reporters are in lockup, and then we do our work, send it back to our team at the office, get everything ready, and publish when the minister starts talking at 2 p.m. So very strict protocols that are involved with all the embargoes. I had to sign my life away this morning. If for some reason somebody in our team makes a mistake and releases any information before the embargo of 2 o'clock, we will be banned from Treasury for the next 2 years. And I guess we'd require quite a bit of begging to get back. Well, I've been going to these things for decades, and there's no way that I would ever dream of breaking an embargo. And my colleagues are exactly the same, so we haven't got that problem. But anyway, that's how the whole process works. And that means there's no editor's desk tomorrow or on Thursday. I'll be staying over on Wednesday evening in Cape Town. There's a Treasury breakfast on Thursday morning that I'm quite keen to attend and listen and pick up some more there. And of course, as fate would have it, I'll also be attending the Clem Sunter Memorial, which is on Thursday in Somerset West. So on the way back, I'll be there too. So you're going to have to do without your editor's desk until Friday, where I'll be breaking with the usual tradition of not doing a Friday, but I'll be giving you an update then. Anyway, that's the story. As far as the BizNews site is concerned today, there's a very strong story from our partners at the Financial Times about Donald Trump and the crisis of his own making. We've been following the Iran issue now for, well, months. Iraj Abedian, Dr. Iraj Abedian, who was born in Iran, came to South Africa as a 20-year-old, had some very senior posts here, served on a lot of companies. He was the chief economist at Standard Bank for an extended period. He was the professor of economics at University of Cape Town. So this is a guy who knows what's going on. And being Iranian born and bred, and with many members of his family over there, he's been keeping a very close eye on what's going on in Iran, and he will be at the BizNews conference. So he'll be updating us on what's going on there. That's mid-March. By then, though, it could be a very different story, because when you read through the article in the FT today, and they've got sources let's just say high places, it looks to them like Donald Trump has painted himself into a corner. On the one hand, he is saying to the Iranians, you need to abandon your nuclear bomb intentions. On the other hand, he's getting very little support from the Iranians. And of course, on top of all of this, Donald Trump has also promised those who went in the streets, and more than 10,000 of whom were killed, he's promised those Iranians that I've got your back. We'll look after you. We'll come, we'll support you. The Iranian regime, from their perspective, aren't playing ball. They are negotiating very, very hard. And according to this piece in the FT, there's a great surprise to the Americans that the Iranians have just ignored the fact that they've got this massive troop buildup in the Persian Gulf, and now a second grouping coming. This is the USS, another aircraft carrier, the USS Gerald Ford, which is on its way to the region from Crete. So there's a lot happening at this point in time, and it is very well documented by the FT. For Donald Trump not to do anything, he's going to need major climb down by the Iranian regime, which at this point in time doesn't seem to be doing it, and is showing no sign of actually going along those lines. And in the absence of that, fasten your seatbelts. These things happen. Wars happen. Sometimes they happen for reasons that we don't know as the public. It's all going on behind the scenes. But in this instance, all we can do in South Africa is hope that our politicians shut up and don't side with one or the other, even though Iran was sponsored into BRICS by South Africa. So I suppose that's a forlorn hope. But my goodness, as Iraj continues to tell us, those who are running Iran are not the majority. It's a very small minority who are in control there. And in fact, South Africa is in danger of being on the wrong side of history again, as we tend to do quite often. Anyway, it is what it is. And we live in this beautiful country, even though we empty our pockets, and we're going to do that again tomorrow or at least understand tomorrow where our money is going. So I'm going to close off with another great story that we've got on the site today, which talks about the one piece of health data that is now becoming the focus point of many of the wearables, and it's HRV, or heart rate variability. And we got a piece on Biz News from The Economist, which has a close look at this and how HRV works. It's under the title of the most useful indicator of your overall health. And in essence, while the higher the score is when you're looking at things like heartbeats, the worse it is. With heart rate variability, the higher the score, the better. Because if you have a really hectic workout, or if you have lots of stress, you have a big night out, your HRV will fall, and that's not a good sign. A good sign is when HRV is up, and this is due to the difference between the sympathetic nervous system, which is often known as fight or flight, and the parasympathetic, or rest and digest system. And you want to be more rest and digest than fight or flight, essentially. And that's it's a good piece, and I strongly recommend that you read it. I learned a lot from it anyway, and I'm sure you will too. Well, I'm going to leave it there for today. Join me tomorrow at just after 2 o'clock. When we'll have the latest insights, our insights, on the national budget. We're not doing a budget webinar tomorrow evening. If you'd like to get fresh off the press, Davi Ruart is inviting all of the Biz News community to join his live budget review. And this is his 41st budget, so who am I to try and compete with that? Davi really does tell things in a way that we can all understand. Just go on to BizNews, go and have a look at the Davy Ruart interview that I did yesterday, and you'll find the link to his webinar there. Thanks for trusting us with your time. I'm Alec Hogg. Until Friday. Cheerio.